Don't hit yourself, Elise Castle.
I know, but I had to because my hands aren't free, so I just slapped myself in the face.
Stop hitting yourself.
I know, that was really awkward. Sorry. I was like, what am I doing?
Hey, everyone. So we're here today.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
What's up, Elise Castle? We're kind of doing a combo documentary / let's look back at this first and maybe, who knows,
final
only, maybe, yeah, exactly, season Evan, just like that. It's gonna be a little fast and loose, but we're gonna talk about what anything that comes to mind, really. Where should we start, Elise? What do you think we should start with?
Well, here's the thing. I was holding off watching this documentary until we talked about it, because I didn't want to have like too much stuff in my brain. So I just watched it, and I was like much more emotional watching it than I thought I would be.
Yeah.
Which is very strange. But like when I was watching it, I was more emotional watching this than I was watching the series. And I think it's because I really got to see, like, I almost wish they would have released something like this before they released the series. Like, not obviously with the spoilers, but just something like, I don't know, because I think once you watch this, now you'll go back and watch the series and think how much they put into it. And you'll start to almost, not that we didn't appreciate it, but I think realize that, like, oh, this was so thought out.
Yeah, it's very, it's a very sentimental journey. It's just a lot of nostalgia watching this documentary. And it's funny, it's nostalgia for 10 episodes that we just saw, but it's a lot of nostalgia for the 90 whatever episodes that came before.
Yeah, and what I loved about the documentary is they focus so much on everyone else. It wasn't about, I mean, it was about the four women and SJP, or as we learn, she is called SJ.
SJ.
Is the, you know, because she is an executive producer and so much of what she feels is in this, and she actually owns so much of the stuff that they use. But a lot of this is about the people behind the scenes, and that's how it opens. It opens with Molly Rogers, who is the costume designer for And Just Like That, and we find out that she was kind of handpicked for this. Pat Field suggested her. She moved to New York City in 1984, and Patricia Field kind of took her under her wing. And Molly was involved in all the seasons and the movies. So it was great to have someone with that much knowledge.
You know, I was really taken aback by how many, and of course it's the ones that we meet, so it's probably a smaller percentage than it almost feels like, but the amount of people that were like, I worked on the pilot of Sex and the City, like, there,
yeah,
like so many crew members that have been there for the entire time.
Well, and that also says a lot about the character of the people working on it, right? Like, you know, you think about jobs you've had and even places we've worked where people come back to work there. And it's like, oh, that says a lot about it, as opposed to I've worked at places where I've been like, I'm never going back there, including theaters and stuff. And I loved watching Molly go through all of the wardrobe pieces. And it's actually all belongs to Sarah Jessica Parker, SJ, and just us getting those little flashback moments. We saw it with the Dior white dress, which we found out was one of the most expensive pieces. There was that custom made for her by Alexander McQueen, the Staten Island outfit, the choos, where she says, I love this choo. And we would see the dress and then see the scene, which was really cool.
Yeah, it was funny. They showed so many outfits, and it was funny the amount of times that SJ was able to be like, this was blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And this, and I was like, oh, I remember that once you show it to me. And I guess it's very different if you're the character and you wore
right,
the
and
costume
you rehearsed
and you have that
in it,
feel.
Yeah.
Right. But for me, I was like, oh my gosh, it's just like, and you know, she was wrong every once in a while. Everyone, I think there were one or two that she said this was blah, 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 and it would show the scene, and I was like, I don't think that's quite the scene that she thought it was, but it was still pretty amazing.
And it was also really funny because she kept saying, I can't believe this is in here, and I wanted to be like, I think at this point we just realize everything's in here.
Yeah.
And she was saying that they were pulling for closet scenes and background treats, which I thought was fun because they were realizing, like, this isn't just for us, this is for, like, the fans as well. And then we get to this scene, the first time I got a little bit emotional is when they're driving across the bridge in a car. And SJ says that they ask about, like, what is Carrie to you? And she says, Carrie is like someone she hasn't seen in a while. And when she's in the past 20 years, when she sees someone that's super New York, she thinks she's seeing it with her eyes and Carrie's. And that made so much sense to me because in And Just Like That, you and I have talked about how, like, it feels like Sarah Jessica and Carrie have kind of blended.
Yeah, I also think it brings to mind, you know, I think about every once in a while you'll bring up a really random background thing that's happening on the show. And it's funny how I think it's great that you notice those things, because in a way I think that I don't, because that's so just New York.
Mm-hmm.
And their ability to put those moments in, like, I think about, you brought up the person that was on their way to like do their performance art with like their broom and their microphone,
right,
or
yeah,
whatever. And they show that little clip in there. And it's funny, when you brought it up, I was kind of like, it didn't even strike me, because my eye doesn't see it, because it just feels so natural. So I love that you see those things.
Right.
And then on the other hand, I think I don't see them, because to me it's like, yeah, that's just, New York is weird. Like, there's so many weird things that happen in this city that you're like, yeah, that's, I live in New York.
Yeah, and I think even more so that Sex and the City being a love letter to New York, I noticed that in this. Like, it made me really realize, like, oh, I like being here. And right now, you know, there's a lot of crap going on in this city and a lot of negative stuff. And I think this was just kind of a reminder that I do love being here. And then we get to the three ladies at lunch, but it's not Carrie, Charlotte, and Miranda. It's SJ, Cynthia Nixon, and Kristen Davis.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you noticed this, but I was like, oh, this is still them. Like, they're talking about stuff and it still feels so very the characters and them. And we find out that Sarah Jessica has a BlackBerry still.
Yeah, that was funny. Mm-hmm. She still has a BlackBerry, which I, you know, one of the things that I, because I didn't rewatch the entire series for this mm-hmm. sit down, but I watched like half of them. And it was funny how the other thing that I hadn't ever noticed that you had noticed was Carrie going back and forth between her BlackBerry and her iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first scene when they're sitting at that lunch that shot at the Whitney, we found out by watching this documentary,
mm-hmm.
she has both phones right there in front of her. The entire scene, they're both sitting there.
Right. And if you notice, she uses the first phone, the iPhone, to take a picture of the guy in the hat, right?
Yeah, that's,
and
like, so her technical phone.
That's,
and
like, then I her think social her media phone.
Right, exactly.
And the BlackBerry is like her personal phone. And that's probably a Sarah Jessica Parker thing, too.
I bet.
She was probably like, sure, Carrie can have an iPhone, but I really don't get it.
Well, because in the documentary, when she's filming, she'll have moments where she's filming the dresses. I think she's using the iPhone.
Yeah.
I think those are just her phones.
Yeah, she just has two, because she's like, this one's for cameras. And I love when Michael Patrick King was talking about, because I didn't even think about this, but how when LTW approaches for the first time and greets the women, that it was so important to them that they weren't replacing Samantha.
Right.
And how, like, she was going to get a seat at that table in that empty fourth chair. And when she did that, it was very clear that Carrie and Miranda get up. And I thought that was so interesting and something I never thought of.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a thing that I hadn't noticed that I enjoyed when it was pointed out. Also, just really also quickly, the other thing that he brought up there was, like, the hate that Nicole Ari Parker got when she was cast in this show. I just want to speak to, like, passionate fans out there. It's nice to be passionate. Also be nice. She's just an actress that was cast in a role.
Yeah, I mean, the same could be said for Sada Ramirez,
right?
Like, the stuff that they have had to put up with. And Sada's been pretty cool with it, but still, it's like, Che Diaz, they're just playing a character, you know?
It can be a little bit much. Anyways, well, let's go on from there. So, yeah, so.
And then we saw, like, a COVID blurb, which I thought was interesting, where you see the Zoom reading, like, where they're doing, like, a table read on Zoom with Julie Halston as Bitsy.
Yeah.
Which was cool. And then, you know, they talk about the Samantha thing for a minute. And I really like how they talked about leading with compassion, and that, like, when friends leave your life, like, that's, you know, that's usually led with sadness, but also compassion. And she says, like, friends sometimes grow apart. And that's true. I mean, you know, you ask anyone that's had really great friends and ask them if they still are in their lives 25 years later. And I'm sure a lot of people have at least one that isn't. And one of my favorite quotes is that relationships don't end, they change. And I think that's so true with this. You know, I'm a strong believer that every person comes into your life to teach you a lesson for some reason. And sometimes they stay because they're going to continue to grow, and sometimes they don't. And Samantha and Carrie taught each other a lot of lessons.
Yeah, I thought it was handled really, really well. There was some talk about whether or not her character was kind of like done dirty, but I think that they handled it in a good way. I think that the other thing, not to like jump to probably a thing that we're going to address at the end, I've said this before, I don't think there's any chance that Kim Cattrall's ever coming back to the series. And I don't think that anyone in the creative team thinks that she's ever coming back to the series.
Right.
So I don't think there was a lot of thought put in to like, let's make sure we do it so that if she wants to, she can come back. Like, I think it was that this is the story we're telling. We're going to tell it like this. And Samantha will always be a part of the show through, you know, text messaging. And that'll be enough.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we could talk about this now. One of the questions we did get was, do we think that Carrie's going to talk about her drinks with Samantha when she was in Paris, like on camera? Or do we think that, you know, it's going to be something that they don't discuss. And she's already come back from that and hasn't brought it up yet. I think it would be a great topic for an episode if there's a season two. I'm not sure, though. It might be one of the million things that they in that series that they didn't necessarily address.
Yeah.
We'll see. And so then we get to these really fun scenes with Natasha and Carrie where they're, you know, themselves. And I love when Carrie's like talking about, because Sarah Jessica Parker makes a comment that she's only seen each episode once. And there's many times when she's wrong, where she's like, I think this is our first scene together. And Bridget Moynihan's like, no, remember the teeth and you showed up where I was. And she's like, why? She's like, because you're a professional stalker. And I love that line because it's so true. And that's something that like 2022 Carrie would not, where it doesn't line up for me, because I think 2022 Carrie would be a professional internet stalker, actually. Like, I think she would have known exactly how to find Natasha on the internet. She would have like found her LinkedIn. She would have found all that stuff.
And then I like, because there was a similar moment with John Tenney where it was kind of like, we've made out before. Like,
was Equal Justice a TV show they were on?
Equal Justice. Yeah, it was. I think it was a very short lived. I think it was like a one season TV show back in 1990.
And then we're introduced to Danny Santiago, who's the assistant costume designer. Has a lot of really fun stuff on the And Just Like That costumes page if you follow him on Instagram as well. He's always posting some really cool stuff. And then we see Molly's office. And one thing that popped out to me right away was that she has a Lisa Frank binder. I don't know if you were necessarily familiar with the Lisa Frank universe. You were a little bit older and I'm not the target audience.
I feel like you've mentioned this before, though. I think Lisa Frank has been mentioned by you before.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like a female from the 90s, if you were a kid of the 90s, you definitely understood Lisa Frank.
Gotcha.
And then I absolutely love how much Michael Patrick King hates hats. Yeah. And like, even at the end when Molly says, like, he'll say he never said this, but he said, you know, what does hat turn into with an E after it or something like that about it being hate. But this quote where he's talking, you know, where he knows that these two, that Danny and Molly are going to live a hat fantasy. And he's talking about Big's funeral and says, it cannot be My Fair Lady with these hats. Like, we have to still have a scene here. And then Molly says, blame the gays whenever you can, because she blames Danny. And I was like, I feel like that's a Mike Jensen quote.
It's just good advice in general.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I thought you would really enjoy that. And then the other thing that he said, which I thought was interesting, too, is like, don't make them fall in love with hats or style hair on the hats. And I was like, that seems a bit intense. But then when we get to the end, we see how dramatic it can be. We see the vintage shopping, the vintage Gautier. And then we see her pull all these different pieces. And this was also fascinating for me, too, to like, I kind of experienced this when I was in Austin visiting a friend. And I got to go with him to the huge Round Top, which is like their huge outdoor flea market. And I got to go with him and one of the designers for the hotel that they work with and like watch them pick out pieces for the hotel. And it was so cool because my brain does not work that way, right? Like, my brain doesn't work where I would look at something and be like, this, not this, this, not this, this, not this. And watching them pick all these pieces and it come together perfectly. And that's what I felt like I was watching with this. Like, how does she know, right? Like, this will work, but this won't. And this will work and this won't.
Yeah, it definitely... I'm of like three minds about it, that like, I'm so fascinated by the costuming slash I don't have like the brain for it, but I'm glad that someone does. Yeah. There were just so many shoes.
Yeah. So many shoes and just knowing. And then we see SJ try on all these pieces and say about that vintage Gautier, like, it's hideous, but it's perfect.
Yeah.
And I feel like, that's me.
Okay, Elise.
Don't say that about my friend, Elise. And then we meet Craig, the still photographer.
Who's also been around since the pilot.
Yeah, and what I thought about with him, too, was how much his career has had to change. Because, you know, you're going from film to digital to who knows, you know. I just always think about that with these people and how they have to, like, change with the times. I still serve burgers and fries the same way I served burgers and fries 10 years ago. I guess the computer systems change. And then we meet Cassette Spence, who does props, who's also responsible for the Cosmo color.
Gotcha.
But we didn't have too many Cosmos this time.
Right.
And then we meet the gaffer, who was the gaffer on the pilot.
Yeah.
And then we meet Lusa, the script supervisor. I got a chance to be script supervisor on a film this past summer, and it's really a lot of work. And I was probably doing one hundredth of what she has to do. But she was great. And then we learn about Pebbles.
Pebbles.
They all love saying Pebbles' name. Pebbles is the A camera operator. And then we talk about Cynthia Nixon's directorial debut.
Yes, with the episode of Diwali.
But they say
Diwali.
They do. And what I and I actually really love the quote that she says about being an actor. Like, when you're an actor, you get to go to bed at 9 p.m. and the adults stay up and talk about things. And now I get to stay up with the grown-ups. And I was like, that's so true. Because I remember doing productions and, like, going back. And then the next day, you know, the creative team's like, we were up till 2 a.m. discussing this, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, she gets to stay up with the grown-ups. And she talks about being very decisive. And how you have to be very decisive as a director. And I was just thinking, I'd love to wait on her. Because I would be like, what would you like? She'd be like, I'm ready. I got this.
Cynthia Nixon?
Yeah.
I have waited on her.
I know. Was she very decisive?
Sort of. I mean, she was very nice. And, you know, I don't know that she was directing her meal or anything like
right.
that.
But... she was like, action. All right. To start, we will have. And I also thought it was interesting watching Cynthia Nixon direct while acting.
Yeah, it was fun because she would kind of like turn and give a note and then like go back into character.
Yeah, she'd be like, try it again. Convince me. Or in Kristen Davis's words, I was like, woo! And she wanted me to be like, boo, 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 boo.
Yeah, Kristen Davis is an interesting individual watching on this documentary.
I mean, she's Charlotte.
Yeah. Like her tennis practice was pretty entertaining.
Oh my gosh, I loved watching that. I also didn't realize this was the first time they've ever shot on a subway.
Yeah, I was sort of aware of that only because I know the logistics of shooting on a subway. And it was funny how we had kind of talked about how we didn't think it was really 116th Street. We knew it wasn't 116th Street from outside the subway, but that we didn't think it was in the subway either. And it was funny how in the back of my head, I had been told in the past that Bowery is always, if you ever see the interior of a subway on a TV show or film, my understanding is that almost always it's going to be the Bowery station. And I'd be curious to know exactly why that is. Like, maybe it's just an easy station to shut down.
Right.
But a friend of mine who is in film production, I have this memory of him in the past being like, well, that's the Bowery station. Because whenever you film the subway, it's always going to be Bowery. So interesting little film fact there.
Yeah. And I loved watching them. Like, I'm always amazed when I saw them putting up the sticker over the other one. I'm like, wow, they got it so identical. Yeah. It's like, Elise, it's 2022 on a TV show with a $1 billion budget. I'm sure they'll get it right. And then I liked when MPK was talking about Naya and saying it was important that she was a leader, a teacher, and a student. And I didn't realize that Naya was supposed to be Miranda's original love interest.
Yeah, that was the original idea.
Yeah. But Cynthia Nixon came in with that, like, you know, elder lesbian wisdom and was like, no, no, no. Like, that's not what we want this to be. Why can't it be the Butch character? That's what Cynthia Nixon says.
Yes.
And then we meet Sarita slash Seema. And I like their description of her being the most quiet baller in the world.
Yeah, it's funny because I hadn't really thought of her as a quiet character. But when you then look back on it as they're showing clips, you're like, oh, yeah, no, she's very like even keeled, very like a lot of energy, but low energy, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what this reminded me of, these scenes with Sarita as Seema, because you can see her excitement when she realizes that she's going to be sitting at the table. And she's like, I know these scenes at the table that we so endearingly call like the four ladies at lunch.
Right.
And watching her do that is just so cool, to watch these super successful actresses at this point in their career still have these like pinch me fangirl moments. A friend of mine is a music director on one of like the biggest shows in Broadway, and he is such a fan. Like, anytime new people come into the show, he like just geeks out and is so obsessed with them. And I love that about him. He's my age and he still has not lost that like joy for what you do, because I think it's so easy when you start doing things to be like, keep it cool, baby John, I don't want them to know, but like, be excited, life's short.
Yeah, I agree.
And I love that about her. And I also loved watching the set dressing when they were going through Carrie's closet in her new apartment.
It's pretty dumb on my part how surprised I am every time I'm like, oh, that's a set. Because they all look like real apartments.
Yeah. Like, sorry, I thought you so were just, well, I thought like I was excited about something. You just went, it's pretty
Elise,
dumb.
You're stupid.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
No, it's just, I'm always taken aback by like, oh, right, that's a set. I need to calm down.
Well,
I'm always thinking.
And I think it's actually a lot to be said about what happens right here in this moment where Sarah Jessica says like, no, no, this is Carrie. Like, Carrie lives here. It wouldn't be this clean. We have to intersperse some of the old mold in here, because Carrie's a mess. Like, physically, her space is messy. And it says that, like, you know, she wasn't trained as an actress, SJ, and, like, her way of acting is very tactical, and she doesn't want it to feel like a set when she's there. Like, that's why it works for her, is it can't feel like a set. It has to feel like she has to go through and touch the things, which I thought was cool. And then we go to Naya's apartment, and we meet all of the people that were involved in the art and setting it up and what that entailed, which was so cool to see it, like, flash back and forth with that scene and the pieces there.
And they filmed that at the Woolworth building?
Right. I saw that. And all I could think of was that line from Thoroughly Modern Millie where they're like, the Woolworth building, the MetLife Tower, there's gold in these hills and I'm going to get it or die trying.
Oh.
Is it the MetLife Tower? That's not it.
I don't know Thoroughly Modern Millie quite as well as you perhaps do.
Well, it's the end of Not for the Life of Me.
Gotcha.
The MetLife Tower. That's not it. MetLife wasn't around in 1920s.
I don't know.
Okay, so yeah, and that's where that was filmed. And I love to, you know, we find out later that there is no plot point in the show that hasn't happened to somebody in the room, right?
Yes, and I had heard that before.
Right.
That anytime someone's like, that's insane, I'm always sort of like, it happened, though. Like, it happened.
Right. And they were talking about Michael Patrick King was like, oh, this is so uncomfortable when Charlotte mistakes the woman at the party for someone else.
Yes.
And the director was like, yeah, because every single time I go to, or the writer, is it the writer?
The writer, yes.
The writer, sorry, because of the next line. The writer's like, every time I go into a party, someone else mistakes me for the other black writer.
Yeah.
And she's like, I wanted to put that in. And it's supposed to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a recurring thing, I feel like, in this series where there were lots of complaints of like, oh, it's just so uncomfortable and there are so many awkward moments. And we've talked about this in the original when we were talking about the, you know, and just like that the first time through of the original series had tons of uncomfortable moments. Like, I don't know, I guess we just don't remember them, or that's not what we think about. We think about the glamorous and the pretty and the fun moments, but The original series was full of awkward, uncomfortable moments.
Yeah, and I think that, like that's life, too, and it's important. Charlotte says about LTW, like, shines a light on the rest of her world. Like, LTW comes into Charlotte's life and then shines a light on all the things that, like, she needs to learn about. And then they start talking about different set pieces that were important to incorporate. And we meet the famous chaise,
right,
which I had to write C-H-E-Z, because they keep saying chaise, and I would have said Chase.
Yeah, I think that's what I would have said too.
Yeah. And we talk about how that apartment, SJP remembers it as just being like her and Willie. And then we get into the Willie Garson stuff, which is, you can just tell how loved he was.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we find that she was the only person to know that he was ill until the very end. I like that she says Stanford always said he was the most popular character on the show, and he wasn't joking. Like, he wasn't joking about that. And yeah, I love that. And I also, you know, they talk about the last time he was really there was at Big's funeral, and you see Mario Cantone talking about him and just watching him and everyone, you know, realizing that they just, how much he was loved. That's really all about that.
Yeah.
And then we see more dresses, and we see MPK and SJ looking through everything, and I love seeing all these old clothes and where they were, and we see the Heidi dress, and he's like, why did you put freckles on? She's like, because I want to.
It's funny that I don't remember that, but it's funny as they show it being like, oh yeah, she put freckles on because she was wearing the Heidi dress.
And one thing that I wish, I don't know why, I just like opened my lotion and smelled it. Also, it is the MetLife Tower. I just Googled it, so I am intelligent. I realized that I would have liked to see them explain some other fashion choices. I feel like we only focused on Carrie's fashion choices. I just wanted someone to address the multiple, like, hoods on Miranda's park outfit. Like, could we have just had that moment? You know, there's other choices that we could have gone over, but we didn't. And then we go through those, and then we see her carrying something, and we know what it's going to be. It's going to be that Paris dress, and it's another Sarita / Seema fangirl moment. This is when I really noticed it, where she's like, oh, I know this dress. Like, I know what's going to happen here.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And when we see Carrie eating the Jiffy in her window, I got a little bit teary-eyed there, too. And I realized, I was like, I want that still photo. I want that photo for my apartment. I just think it's so cool.
Oh, nice. It'd be a nice little piece of art.
Yeah. And then we go into the tennis learning.
Yes. It's a madcap romp.
Yeah. Tennis is very expensive. I'm starting The Real Housewives of New York from 2008, episode 1. And yeah, it's really interesting. They're learning tennis and they have private teachers. And I'm like, wow, this is something I can't afford to learn, I guess. And when it comes to sports, I think I'm Kristen Davis. Like the way that she plays, I think that would be me, right? I get a little startled by things.
You do.
I think I'd be good. I'd be good at that. So yeah, we go through this whole thing. Everyone thinks they're good at tennis and this. LTW shocked, or Nicole Ari Parker is shocked when they say that she's pretty good. We find out that there were stunt doubles in there as well, which you probably already knew.
Yeah, I don't think we see them though, do we?
No, we don't see them in this, but they do talk about them there. And then we get to this part I was a little bit confused about. This dress that Carrie's wearing, this is what she wore to Bobby Lee's wedding, right?
Are we on the Magnolia dress?
Yes, the Magnolia dress.
Yeah, the Magnolia dress is what she... It's funny how this moment also... Because I was very confused as to why they were in Paris already.
Me
I was
too. Like, why That's are they what I'm in... saying.
So I didn't even realize that in that dream sort of flash we had that they filmed that part of that in Paris.
Okay.
So she was wearing this. My understanding, and I could be wrong with this, but my understanding is they must have filmed Paris before they went back and filmed the wedding scene.
Right.
So she originally had, she has the Magnolia dress and the little, like the white jacket. And mm-hmm. then she had a hat originally that she wanted to wear that becomes a whole little point thing. Of drama. Yeah. Like there are almost tears over it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that what happened was Michael Patrick King just thought, you're going to have to wear this at the wedding. And in the dream, like whatever we set up this, you'll have to wear it in these other setups. Mm. And this hat isn't going to work in the other setups, which is why they got rid of the hat. So they were filming in Paris, the bridge moment, but also the rest. It was funny because I'm like, you could have just filmed that restaurant like it somewhere in New York. I was just surprised that they went to Paris to film that.
Right. And is that why we couldn't figure out where that restaurant was?
That's probably why.
Yeah.
Because it was in Paris.
It was in Paris. And also we have to remember that a lot of those flashback scenes were cut out.
Correct.
Because of Chris Noth. So I was confused too. I was like, why are they in Paris? I only remember her wearing one dress in Paris. I was a little bit confused.
I had the exact same thought. Yeah, I was like, why are they doing so much clothing in Paris?
And what I liked about the Carrie necklace moment is she realizes it doesn't work. And she's like, all right, I'm just going to put it back where we found it, where when she found her necklace in her purse. And she says, just for us. And again, it was just that moment where I realized how much like heart and soul is put into this work. And I just like that touch. We meet Serge, I could be saying it incorrectly, but Serge Norman, that's SJP's hairstylist. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I take note of that is today I was on Instagram and he had posted that you can see his products in the bathroom at on
gotcha.
Set. And then the hat comes off, right? And like, yes, they were warned. Like MPK was like, don't fall in love with the hat. Don't fall in love with the hat. It's all very Sunday in the Park with George, all this hat talk. And then she's just really dramatic about this, I feel. She's like, I just feel incomplete.
Yeah.
And the fact that we didn't have the same vision, you know, I mean.
Yeah, it's very emotional.
I know. I was just surprised at how emotional it was. And I guess when you trust, I think it's not about the hat, right? I think it's about the fact that she thought that something was so perfect and he didn't. And they work so closely together. And then we go to the scene, you know, as they call an aria with no words. And that dress was the only dress that she saw, that Valentino. That was the only thing she saw. It was perfect from the beginning. And just in general, she seems so gracious. Sarah Jessica Parker on this set with everyone, which I've heard she's super kind.
Yeah.
She gets ashes all over herself. And then it's done. And we see her walk away and we go to the end and they're talking about the premiere and the girls. And she makes the comment of like, don't wear pink. I didn't know what that was. It seems like an inside joke.
It must be an inside joke. I'd like for someone to explain it to me, but
yeah,
it's fine.
We're not in on it.
I'm not part of that group, apparently.
Yeah. Let us know what that means. I'm sure we could Google it at this point. The documentary's been out for a while.
Yeah. So I guess that's basically the documentary, right?
Yeah.
I guess just as I look back at this series, there are a few things that I have discovered that I don't have all the answers to. But we had talked about Isaac Powell, how he was originally cast in it.
Right.
Apparently he was supposed to play a character called George, who was a student at FIT. And I guess we'll never know exactly why the character was cut.
Yeah, it could have, as we discussed, it could have been a Stanford thing.
It could have been. So I'd be curious about that. I also do know that there are several storylines in this that were supposed to be in the third movie. I had mentioned before that Big was supposed to die in the third movie. I do also know that Brady being very sexually active was part of the third movie as well. Mm. That there was supposed to be a whole plot line about him and Samantha, where he's like sending her inappropriate pictures or something
like
that.
You can't see my face right now because I'm on Instagram to look at our questions, but I'm like grossed out.
Yeah. So there was a bit of that, things that were taken from the film and put into this. Should we get to some questions now?
Yeah. So here's some questions from Instagram. We'll try to do as many as we can. And do you think there will be a second season? I do, actually, because I think that people will watch it.
So it's funny how I feel like SJP and Michael Patrick King have been sort of like, well, we're waiting to see if HBO renews us. And then HBO is very much like, we're just waiting to see if they want to do a second season.
Right.
Like, we would definitely do another one. And I think that there's a bit of a, I don't mean standoff in a negative way, but here's my thought on a second season is this. If we come back, it means things will have had to have gone wrong. Does that make sense? Like,
no.
When a series ends, you can live with the idea that they're fine.
Mm.
If you're going to bring people back for a second season, it means more conflict. Like, you can't have a second season where everyone's just happy and everything went well. Like, it can't come back for a second season and, like, Carrie and this new guy are just everything's flowers. Mm. And it can't come back for a second season. And, I mean, the main reason to come back for a second season for me would be to show how things don't work out between Miranda and Jay, which
right.
is it a own thing that we'll get to in a segment we're going to call The Trouble with Miranda. But that's my thought on a second season, is while I would love to see it, I don't think it's necessary. I think they did a pretty good job of getting these characters to a good endpoint in the series. And once again, bringing them back means that things will have to go badly.
Well, I don't think that it's... I get totally what you're saying, but I think it would be a great chance for them to almost redeem themselves in a lot of the ways, like if things with Miranda and Che didn't go well, right? Like that would be kind of interesting to see and have them show like all of the stuff that we'll probably cover in this next portion, because the second part of this question is, why is there so much hate towards Che when it's really directed towards Miranda? She cheated on Steve and her personality was totally different. Which brings us to the problem.
The problem with Miranda. You know, I use this term all the time, that I'm of more than one mind about something, because on one hand, I hate the Miranda storyline. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be totally honest with you, I hate it. I think it's silly and I think it's kind of dumb and it makes me sort of angry, and I hate cheating, and I just don't like it. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. That said, I have come to this show to view the story the writers want to tell me. So on that hand, I'm like, okay, well, this is the story they wanted to tell. They wanted to tell the story of a woman or a person in middle age, maybe a little bit past middle age, who seems to have the nice, perfect, simple, quiet life, who decides that's not what she wants. And so she kind of blows it all up to try something else. I don't love that storyline, but it's the storyline they wanted to tell. And so I'm kind of in that place of like, all right, well, then I'll watch this story that you want to tell me.
Yeah, and I know that I've discussed before that I was like, okay, so we're never going to talk about Miranda's quitting drinking again. And, you know, going back and rewatching and really seeing it, like, I guess this was just to show. I don't think it was to show. I think because I have a personal story with, like, addiction, I was excited to kind of see, like, how are they going to do this? And, wow, finally we're going to see, like, a strong woman struggling with addiction whose whole life didn't have to fall apart, but she was kind of broken on the inside, which I think is the story for so many people out there, including myself. And to see, like, just to kind of have some respect for addicts out there, because I think the idea that people have of addicts is sometimes that they've done it to themselves. However, this just wasn't the story, like you said, that they wanted to tell. I think they were more telling the story of a woman who just during this pandemic, like so many people, did something a little bit too much and needed to step away with it, because she's not like completely sober, because she's asking Che to like shotgun weed into her
right
at various times throughout the show. So maybe she's quote unquote California sober. That's what they
I wasn't going to use that term because
you hate it.
No, I don't feel like you're a huge fan of it.
I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it's fine. Like, I think that if I'm a big proponent of whatever you need to do that allows you to like live the best way that you can for yourself.
Gotcha.
In an honest way. Like, if you're someone like that finds a lot of peace and in your life by doing that, then please do that. I just personally can't do that because I don't know, I'll end up with my hands in a jar of queso while trying to play Mario Kart and occasionally falling asleep, which may or may not have happened in 2009. Yeah. So anyway, that's my thoughts on that. Like,
gotcha.
I know that I had talked about it before in a way, but, you know, I've taken some time. I've thought about it. I'm like, no, actually, like you said, like, that's not the story that they were trying to tell. That's the story that I wanted them to tell.
And it's hard because I think that there was so much pressure on this series from people that have loved it for so long for them to tell the stories that we want. And In some cases, they kind of did. And in this particular case, they really super didn't.
Right. Because we had 20 plus years to sit at home while I had like 2 months to sit at home and try to figure out like where we wanted these women's lives to go.
Right.
And they didn't necessarily go the way that we wanted them to. So then there's a question about, do we think the show's too woke, too politically correct? And do we think that we will have a second season? I mean, my answer to this question is just like, I think that they, in the documentary, they were saying about like how LTW was there to shine a light on like all of the things in Charlotte's life. And I think that's what they were doing, is they were just shining a light on all of the blind spots that these characters have had. And I think that it comes across that way because they're trying to take criticism from 6 or 7 seasons of a show in 25 years and like do it all in one season.
Yeah. And I think that like the term woke gets kind of like thrown around a bit much. For me, it's just being aware. It's just like, all right, let's be aware of what we're putting out there and aware of. And I think that any show that can try to balance that with, you know, period blood on white pants, you know what I mean? Like, it's a tricky balancing act. And did they always do it perfectly? Probably not, but I thought they did a pretty good job with it.
Well, and also, like they said in the documentary, all of these situations that we as viewers think are so extreme have all happened to people.
Right.
Like that's what they said. So it's kind of like shining a light on us to be like, we think this is so outrageous. Well, guess what? It's happened to someone.
Yeah.
You know? So I just, you know, I think they're just telling, they're telling stories. And that's, it may not be the way that you think the stories should be told, but they've happened to people. So that's interesting. If they were to reintroduce Samantha's character in the form of a recast, who would you like to see take on the role? I don't think they're going to do it, but I vote Madonna.
Oh, I like that. That's very interesting.
Thank you.
I just go right to Jean Smart.
Okay.
Like, it's sort of like almost too perfect, I feel like. But I feel like,
yeah,
I feel like she could step into that very, very easily.
Or who's the one that's always on American Horror Story?
Jessica Lange?
Yeah, Jessica Lange.
Okay, yeah, I could see that too. Like, these are all good options.
Yeah, yesterday, Mike and I were walking and he saw Gigi Hadid on a magazine. He's like, I just have to make sure it's not Madonna. And I love it so much because it could have been Madonna. And that's a problem.
The InStyle cover with Gigi Hadid, like, I definitely thought was Madonna. Close up.
Yeah, no, and I did too. And that's a problem. Not for Gigi. Gigi looks perfectly age appropriate. I just want to know if your excitement has subsided a bit or are you eagerly waiting for more? I have to say I'm a bit over it for now. And yeah, I'm hanging here because I want to know what's next with you two. Well, thank you for listening. You know, I'm having a good time and I enjoy the show and I would be perfectly happy if they did another thing. I enjoy it. I would like to see what's next.
I wouldn't mind it being, say, a threer. Like, let's do like 3 seasons of this. I don't need it to be 6 or 7 seasons again, but no. I feel like a solid trilogy of seasons would be very satisfactory.
Yeah, me too.
In my opinion.
And just like that and that and that.
There you go.
Do you think Miranda is a completely different person now, or do you think this is a natural extension of the character she always was? Never truly satisfied with settling down, basically everything Steve says to her when she breaks the news. Personally, I'm torn. Yeah, I mean, I think we've both kind of said this already in previous episodes and today. Like, it's not who we wanted Miranda to necessarily be, but it's not completely outrageous from who she was.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, even in the documentary, we do that flashback with Steve and Carrie on the stoop, and he's talking about Miranda being this strong woman. And when they can't open that thing on set, they're like, Miranda! Like, it's just, it's who she always was, and it's taken a different direction, that's all. We saw a few minor characters from the original series, Bitsy Von Muffling, Susan Sharon. Who else would you like to see on the second season? I mean, do I even have to answer this? But I will. Skipper.
Oh, that'd be kind of interesting. That's funny.
I'd also like to see Lainey.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I just want to know that Lainey's okay.
Yeah, I want to know that Lainey, I mean, maybe that's where I get my true addiction storyline, right?
Yeah, I think that's great. I would love to have Lainey come back.
Ooh, this one's a fun one. Who would your dream cast be if And Just Like That was turned into a Broadway musical?
I'm not good at this off the top of my head with these kind of things. You need to give me like a solid like casting like week, but you go ahead and get with it.
Okay, so Carrie Bradshaw, I'm going to mispronounce her name, but is it Cassie or Casey Levy?
I think it's Cassie Levy.
Cassie Levy is Sarah Jessica Parker.
Okay.
But she's too young.
Yeah.
So I got to cast And Just Like That, right? So I can't do this. Stephanie J. Block's in there.
She'd be a good Charlotte.
That's what I was thinking. Kelly O'Hara would also be a good Charlotte. Yeah, this is going to be tricky.
Yeah, this would take a lot of time. I feel like Laura Benanti would be a good Carrie.
Yeah, Laura Benanti is Carrie. You're right. Laura Benanti is Carrie. We have Stephanie J. Block as Charlotte. Miranda, I want to do Jane Lynch, but that's not right.
Yeah, and like Faith Prince doesn't really fit into the exact...
Bitsy.
Okay, all right, there we go.
But Julia Halston could also be Bitsy.
Well, I was going to say Sarah Jessica Parker could also be Carrie.
Right, and Sada Ramirez is obviously going to be Che.
Right.
So, I mean, and Cynthia Nixon's going to be Miranda. Like, the thing is like, all of these women are New York actresses, so it's hard to, like, recast them as... It would be easier for us to cast Sex in the City than it would to cast And Just Like That, I think.
Right.
So this is hard for us, but Liza's going in there. As Liza Minnelli. Then my friend Renee is an asshole and just wrote, what is And Just Like That? Can you please share your fashion highlights of the series? I mean, actually, that vintage Gautier was one of my favorite outfits, and I like to see how it came to.
I could see you wearing that.
Thank you. I want to find it.
That feels very Elise Castle.
Where would I wear it? Probably somewhere inappropriate. I have a really big, like, I always show up to a dinner and everyone's like in sweats and I'm wearing like something too much about right. What have you heard about the writer's room? Too young and unfocused for the mature direction of those characters? And why not have the wokeness be there already, a natural part of 10 years of growth instead of so performatively new? The writer's room, to me, when they were talking about the different episodes, they showed the writer's room for when Charlotte was having the flash period, and it was all people of the appropriate age. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mike might know more about this than I.
No, I mean, the writer's room really was just, you know, MPK, Julia Rottenberg, Aliza Zaritsky, Rachna Fruchtbaum, Kelly Goff, and Samantha Irby.
Yeah.
So, like, that's it. That was the entirety of the writer's room.
Yeah, and it's all people, like, no one was too young. And I think, too, to go back to, like, why be performative when, yeah, they would have naturally progressed, but this is a TV show, and I think, in, like, the words of a math teacher, show your work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that Samantha's a little bit younger, but in general, I feel like they're all around the correct age. And yeah, that's the other thing, is that I think once again, we get lost in this world where, like, go back and watch the original series. It's crazy. Like, crazy things happen. It's ridiculous. It's over the top.
Mm-hmm.
We just accept that now. So, like, we see new episodes and we're like, this is nothing like, and it really is.
Yeah, I've said that.
A pretty good offshoot of the original series.
Yeah, I've said that over and over again to people. And I was like, maybe you and I don't think it's that outrageous with these things because we've watched it recently.
Right.
And we've really looked at it recently. But if you go back and rewatch the series, now I can say this, rewatch it for the first time, which you guys can, unless you can erase your memory. A lot of it is weird. And the problem is I kind of compare it to like watching your high school musical, right? Like you go back and you're like, when we did Grease, it was so good. It was like Broadway quality. And then you go back and watch it and you're like, oh God, okay. And it's the same thing with this show. You know, we have such fond memories of it because it was so iconic. And then you think it's so ridiculous, but it's pretty. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that
happens.
And don't
watch the syndicated versions. And not that you can't watch them, but like they cut out the weirdest moments. Mm-hmm. Like if you watch the ones that have commercial breaks, they're cutting out the craziest stuff. Like go and watch the actual version. And I think that some people will be surprised that it is a pretty insane. I mean that in a good way. Like I find it highly enjoyable, but it's not the sort of pristine, perfect series that I think we remember it as being.
No. I mean, there's a lot of wild stuff. Carrie chasing Natasha losing a tooth, no one showing up to her birthday, Stanford on manhunt, you know.
So then I just had a few random notes that I had taken that I wanted to just toss off kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. One is just I wrote Bitsy. And I think it's because Bitsy comes in and then we do get her for two episodes. But one thing that strikes me about this are the people that come in and do one or two episodes that we thought were going to do more.
Yeah, for sure. Like Gloria.
Yeah. I definitely thought she was going to be like a massive character. And is she?
Oh my
I think
gosh.
She's in two episodes,
we were
right?
Yeah, but I still think she might be. Like she has secrets. She knows shit.
But that's the other thing. All of that stuff that, like, didn't really pay off. And I get that we only had 10 episodes. But one of the things that I wrote was that if, for no other reason, there should be another season, because it's crazy that we never get into Big's computer.
We never get into his computer. We never find out, like, the significance of that dog.
Right.
We never find out really why Natasha got the money. Like, I still think it was, like, kind of hush money for something. We never get into Gloria. We don't find out what Susan Sharon did.
So I do love the theory. What, are you the one that brought this up? The theory that Susan Sharon was the 76th guest?
No, someone on our Instagram did.
I really like that theory. That's what the whole fight was about, was that she was the
76th guest to the wedding and they cut her from the list.
So I like that. I also did. I remember in the moment being like, we are probably not the authorities on this particular subject, so we probably didn't. But apparently, like, pot can make sex feel better. Like, there is something mm-hmm. about it that, like, can make you, like, it heightens your sensibilities. So that was a sort of a quick little, like, correction that I wanted to put in. Also, the idea that Bobby died during COVID and not necessarily from COVID, which I had stated that he was a victim. And I don't mean that, like, in the political way of, like, he died with it, not blah, blah, blah. Like, it was on the podcast that they do, it was mentioned, like, we're not saying that that's what he died from. He just died during that. And I think part of that was to highlight the difference in when you lost someone during that, you couldn't have a normal funeral. You couldn't have, like, a typical get-together. So I just felt like I wanted to point that out. I also...
Who's Bobby? Bobby Fine.
Yes, yes. I also... It's funny how I had never noticed that, because we talked about the lampshade hat mm-hmm. that Carrie has on and that she takes it off and puts it on the lamp. Charlotte removes it from the lamp.
Okay.
So you can rest assured that it's not going to catch on fire, because Charlotte very quickly moves it off of there. And then my only other note that I wrote is just like, remember when Carrie moved into that random apartment in Chelsea for a day?
Yeah, and just left. And like the only thing she brought with her was like a lamp, a pan, and a hat.
Yeah, that's all. It was my last little thing. So this wasn't like a super deep dive into the whole season, but I thought it was fun to just kind of like use the documentary to kind of look back and look at these 10 episodes in kind of an overall.
Well, like Cynthia Nixon, I kind of felt like this was my directorial debut of the podcast. I felt
at
like
least took the reins.
I took the reins, and Mike said that. He's like, you're going to have to take the reins on this one. And I was like, okay. You know, I didn't have time to really prepare for that like Cynthia did, but I feel like I did a good job. And I
so welcome to Elise Castle's directorial
welcome
podcast
to my
debut.
directorial podcast debut. I love this for me. Yeah, I feel the same. Like, I was not expecting to like this documentary as much as I did, and I just wanted more.
Yeah, it was very fun. I would definitely recommend it to anyone who had watched the series to give it a look-see.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's been fun talking with you about this series. You know, we are sort of in perpetual conversation about what we might do next, so stay tuned, because we still have some ideas that need a little bit of ironing out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the correct term? But yeah, so who knows? Who knows what the future holds? But we'll be there in some form.
Yes. And just like that, it's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Thanks to all for going on this journey. And it's been fun. And, you know, see you out in the universe.
See you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. And don't forget to check out my new podcast with Vanya Arslanian, Mike and Vanya Can't Not. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link or tell a friend, take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, stay safe, and let's all take care of each other.
When she sees someone uniquely, she that then Carrie and Samantha get up, and I thought, or Carrie, sorry, that Carly, that Carrie and Miranda get up. Yeah, she says, "Did we kiss on the Eagle Justice?" What's that? Was, is that a show?
It's Equal Justice, oh. But you were very close.
I was like, "Is that a ship?" Have we told the story about You Are the Weakest Link?
No, because it's really random. Why would we have told that?
It's great. Our friend was like talking about that movie or that TV show and was like, "What is the tagline? You are the weakest link."
No, but he thought the tagline was, "You're the worst, goodbye."
Yeah.
Like, it's called The Weakest Link.
I mean, I think it's You are the worst, goodbye. And who would your dream cast be?